Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
Yes, Javier is the Darby Allin to my Sting. And we are here this week to talk about Rick the Model Martel. He's Darby Allin because he's young and cool and knows all the cool words and he skateboards probably. And I'm old.
No skateboard. Is it because I'm hurt? Is it because I always get hurt?
I mean, you do not take care of yourself in a way that is akin to Darby Allin, but you also don't jump off of like ledges and shit.
But I would. I would.
I too went through an emo phase, so I'm just like Sting. And it wasn't a phase, Mom. It's a lifestyle.
Is it because every time that you do any physical activity, your hair just goes up?
Yeah, and my face paint wears off immediately.
Oh, you wear face paint to the gym.
This is face paint. All right, we are talking about Rick Martel this week. If you've never listened to the podcast, what a weird way to start. We take a wrestler and cover their career through five of their most important matches. You should tell us on social media who you want us to cover in the future. Also, check our old back catalog. We've covered a lot of wrestlers. What do you know about Rick Martel?
He was one half of Strike Force, which is like the coolest name for a tag team literally ever.
It's like, very much like a strong 80s name.
Like, I just don't understand how they didn't main event everything. In the 80s, with that name looking that jacked. It's so, like, I know that. I know, obviously, the model gimmick.
Yeah.
Is he Canadian? He kind of looks Canadian.
He sure is Canadian, a retired Canadian professional wrestler. He's from a family of wrestlers, actually. Made his professional debut at age 17 when his brother Michelle, a wrestler, asked him to replace an injured wrestler. He had actually been a skilled amateur wrestler and quickly adapted to pro wrestling. He is, of course, from Quebec City, Canada.
Ah, he's one of those.
He is a Frenchie, as they say. Bonjour. After starting in wrestling, he traveled the world. He won titles in Stampede Wrestling in Calgary. He went to Vancouver-based NWA All-Star Wrestling, New Zealand, Japan, Hawaii, Puerto Rico-based WWC. But then his first real success came in the NWA's Portland affiliate. So he hung up there in Portland and got weird. Pacific Northwest Wrestling. And that's actually where our first match is. It's the PNW heavyweight title being defended by Martel in a 2-out-of-3 falls match versus Buddy Rose, August 9th, 1980.
This is a weird match. I can't lie to you.
So we have no context for this, right? However, no. I want everyone to know that Playboy Buddy Rose is in a mask that has a wig on it. Like a mask that looks cool, but like a burn victim mask.
Nah, like legit, he looks like the opposite version of the kid from Us.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why that's the first thing I thought of, but it's the first thing I thought of.
He's like the tethered. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the tethered of the little boy from
this
Us.
This is the tethered Buddy Rose. I don't know why there's a wig included on the mask, but it is a weird
choice. Is it because he's
choice.
Bald? Actually, no, I can't say he's bald because the wig like slowly rides up and during part of the match and you see his hair underneath.
I think he was just trying to say that he is like a blonde and instead of dyeing his hair, he just added it to a wig, which is a strong decision.
You know, I wouldn't have done that, but I'm also not Playboy Buddy Rose, who is called Playboy, even though nothing about him screams Playboy. You know, I guess we got to get this out of the way now instead of when we actually start talking about the match. To call yourself Playboy, there just has to be a level of stilo, some aura, an energy, a frequency on a higher level. You know, it's got to be like people look at you and they're like, damn, sup, Playboy. Like, they can't even call you Playboy. It's got to be Playboy. Like, that's just how it has to be. And he is not that.
So, I will say, after doing some quick Googling on Playboy Buddy Rose, part of me thinks that the name is like calling a big guy tiny. Because three of the first four photos that you see of Playboy Buddy Rose is a shirt that is too tight on him saying, I worked hard for this body. I think he's in on the joke. I think that's part of the appeal. I think he was very much like when he was younger, he was very much like a guy with the drip. You know what I mean? And then as he got older, he just kind of leaned into it. Honestly, the Playboy Buddy Rose episode coming soon.
Yeah, has to. I mean, that is like 15 years from now. We're in the doldrums of professional wrestling. Martel looked jacked.
He's also billed as Ricky Martel from France. And I was like, that's neat. That's a neat thing to do. Yeah. Yeah, no, he is jacked to the gills. Like, on a scale of debuting, like returning WWE wrestlers, he's like close to a Randy.
Honestly, he looks like fucking Bruno if Bruno were attractive.
I love the just drive-bys on Bruno that happened on this podcast. Also, Ricky Martel is 24 here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he is still old pretty face. Young. Old face, better than being an old soul, which if you're wondering is when parents don't know what to call you, they call you an old soul instead of a weirdo. They're like, you have an old soul. And but it's like, it? Yeah, you're just a fucking dork.
So losers, then.
In terms of the actual in-ring action, a lot of this is Buddy Rose just begging off and Rick Martel getting the upper hand.
Hey, we get a back rake, which is the Hulk Hogan special.
Yes.
So, yeah. No, it's, I mean, Martel gets out of a hold. He puts on a Muda Lock, kind of, but like straight on. I don't really know how to.
That Buddy Rose gets out of by biting him on the thumb. And kudos to the cameraman for the cleanest zoom in on a on a bitten thumb I've ever seen.
That you know who the cameraman was. Christopher Nolan.
I believe it. Inception theme. Some really good stuff. Like Buddy Rose is clearly just a chicken shit heel. You know, he's hiding behind the ref. A lot of like
the worst Ric Flair impersonation I've ever seen.
It's a lot of that. There's a lot of good strikes by Martel. He gets the first fall with a Frankensteiner into a pin. It is 2 out of 3 falls, and it's also no DQ. That's important to remember.
I'm not going to lie to you. The Frankensteiner caught me off guard. I was not expecting that to be in his arsenal.
I didn't think they had invented that in America yet.
Well,
from Mexico/Japan yet.
I just didn't expect the white man to be doing that at that stage.
Why do you sound like Schmidt? A white man? No!
Typical!
The second fall is a lot of the same. Martel with more strikes, double axe handle, a nice backbreaker that he likes to pull out a lot, a Boston Crab by Martel, like a lot of good moves. Buddy
a
Rose
historic
getting
move for him. He loves a good Boston Crab throughout his career.
He really does.
Rose like does Buddy the Rose. Iron Claw to the gut.
He does the Iron Claw and then proceeds to do like fire feet like he's Muhammad Ali. He's just like shaking and dancing.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Martel just ducks and fucking clocks him. Just clocks him.
Martel pulls on the mask and then we get a camera cut. There are like 2 or 3 camera cuts during this, which is just a byproduct of the tape trading days because for those of you listening who don't know what tapes are like, and the only reason I do is because tapes were still around when I was a kid, not frequently used, but like my dad had half of Arnold Schwarzenegger's filmography on tape. So I had to deal with learning how to do that. Yeah, they cut a whole lot and very easy. The older they got, the easier it was to cut. So, yeah, that's how that works.
It's true. So there's a big cut in the middle here after Martel's starting to pull down the mask of Buddy Rose. Rose is fully, and now he fully has the mask on. There's a double stomp by Rose and a standing elbow drop. Martel goes up top, does the double stomp twice to Rose. And then we get like another cut, and it's not clear what happened in the interim. I think we missed a whole fall.
Maybe.
Like, yeah, because the Martel had got put on the groin first on the turnbuckle, and then the video skipped ahead. And in that time, I think there was the first fall for Rose. So we get the final fall.
It's possible.
Where Martel reverses the back suplex, puts Rose crotch first on the turnbuckle, and then gets the pin. So he retains the title.
Which, I'm just going to be honest with you, makes a lot of sense. If I get crushed on the top rope and I fall back into the ring, I'm done.
I'm done. I'm out. I'm tired.
I don't need to continue. Go ahead.
In terms of making sense, so this was August 9th, 1980. On August 16th, 1980, Rick Martel would leave Pacific Northwest Wrestling. But he would leave in a Loser Leaves Town match to Playboy Buddy Rose. So Buddy Rose would eventually drive Martel out. Martel then went...
Drove a lot of fans out, too.
Martel then went to the WWF in July of 1980. He formed a tag team with Tony Garea. They actually won the WWF tag team titles on November 8th of that year, beating the Wild Samoans, which I think was really interesting. Losing them to
Roman Reigns' dad.
Yes, losing them to the Moondogs on March 17th. Their second reign, which they got again from the Moondogs, they lost on October 13th, 81 to Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito, which I thought was interesting.
Okay. Like
then Martel would leave WWF in April 82 and sign with the AWA and quickly became one of their top guys. He beat Jumbo Tsuruta to win the AWA World Heavyweight title on May 13, 1984, and his reign as champion lasted almost 19 months. He had the longest AWA title reign of the 80s.
Do you think that's one of those circumstances where Hogan jumped, Savage jumped, and they were just like,
reliable worker.
We need somebody young who is going to be able to carry the promotion. Oh, this guy's available. He's got some pedigree because he was in the WWF, I guess, probably still by that point. Let's bring him in. And then they were just like, oh, belt him.
But also, clearly, good-looking guy, a very good mat worker for the 80s. Like, a really strong mat worker for the 80s.
Guy busted a freaking Frankensteiner out in 1980. What are we doing here?
And now let's talk about the match that I think is my recommendation this week, because I think this match rules.
100%.
He has a showcase title versus title match, October 21st, 1985. It's the AWA champion Rick Martel versus the NWA world champion Ric Flair in All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Let me tell you something. This might be the greatest two times speed match I've ever seen.
This might be one of my favorite random finds we've ever had on this podcast, where I'm like, I didn't know this match existed, nor would I have ever thought at any point that Ric Flair, of course, was world champion. He was world champion all the time. Yeah. But that Rick Martel was also a dueling world champion, and they would have like a nearly 30-minute match in Japan that was really good.
Like, insanely. This, I mean, I know we just had Japanuary, but this might be best match we've covered so far this year.
That's disrespect to Atsushi Onita and all of the exploding rings.
I mean, come on, man.
Have you ever had it where you, like, you don't know, like your parents just like offhandly tell you something like that they did that was really cool when they were kids, and you're like, wait, what? You were cool?
Yeah, my dad crashed his motorcycle and lost like four teeth.
My mom rebuilt a Mustang with a high school boyfriend.
Yeah, my mom wasn't cool. I don't know. My mom was a nerd, and then she reached a point where her family couldn't afford to send her to school anymore, and then she was just home.
My mom's first concert was Judas Priest.
All right. Why is your mom like...
She's the...
You guys haven't met Evan's mom. I have. She's great. An absolute sweetheart. Literally the nicest woman you will ever meet. And this is kind of shocking to me. I'm not going to lie.
No, she was so fucking cool. She still is super cool, but unbelievable. But that's how I feel about, like, Rick Martel was AWA World Champion, and he had a match
with Judas Priest.
Yeah, this is that, except in wrestling form. Again, like, this match is long. Everyone should go watch it. It's definitely the recommendation this week.
Again, the best 2.0 speed match I've ever seen. You can watch this on 2.0 speed, and you get just the same amount of impact.
You get a lot of Ric Flair begging off. Classic. It's really jarring to go from Buddy Rose doing it to Ric Flair doing it, because Ric Flair is Ric Flair.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. It's like, oh yeah, let's have a good, you know, we're preparing to get into the playoffs. Oh crap, round one. You know what? This is, I don't know, who's a quarterback with a cannon who's not very good? Like,
why is my only brain going to Joe Flacco?
Yeah, actually, that works. You know, we get Joe Flacco over here just bombing it down. Oh, two pick sixes. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that seemed pretty easy. Let's go see what it looks like when it's the other guy. Oh, it's Lamar.
Yeah. This is the equivalent of drinking an RC Cola and then a Coke. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess.
this is how it's supposed to taste. All right. There's some really good
stuff.
This
is like your team sucking and then you draft someone really good. This is what San Antonio Spurs fans must be feeling this entire season is exactly this.
So there's a test of strength early on that Martel wins, but Flair gets to the ropes immediately. Martel does some great moves. Military press slam is in there. He pulling Flair out of the corner, sending him into the ring post. Like, a lot of good stuff happening early for Martel.
There's a handshake, a sign of respect from Flair. Yeah, he doesn't actually like bait him either.
A couple of those. He does a couple of those in the match.
Yeah, you really put. I think Flair really put him over strong in this match.
Flair hits a butterfly suplex.
I love a good butterfly suplex. And it's clean. It's like one of the cleaner butterfly suplexes you'll ever see.
What is this?
Most people like. Honestly, I kind of blame Mick Foley for this. A lot of people who do butterfly suplexes kind of like turn it into like a little hip toss of sorts. Like they like do it a little bit to the side. Flair said, nah, screw that. He picks him up and like literally just overhead suplexes him backwards. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
There's also they call it a Saito suplex by Martel, according to commentary.
That's a gut wrench if I've ever seen one.
Thank you.
A Saito suplex is basically a back suplex, but yeah, instead of a straight back, it's like a little to the side, like so it's at an angle, kind of.
And like, don't get me wrong, the commentary was in Japanese, but I definitely heard the words Saito and suplex next to each other, and I was like, I don't think that's it there, partner.
Hey, Saito suplex it.
Running crossbody by Martel for a two. Flair back in control. Hits some woos, some knee drops. Martel blocks a knee drop, and then in a classic move that we've all seen, whoever Flair's against locks in a figure four.
Every single freaking time, man. Every single freaking time. Flair does eventually get out of it by grabbing onto the ropes. Flair gets the advantage back. He ends up hitting a shin breaker, which I love every single time. He does the rope sit on the leg where he puts the person's leg up on the rope and jumps. And just
that has a high degree of sometimes looking like it does absolutely nothing.
But in theory, right?
In theory, it's great.
It's a great move. Like, it's all, if I'm it's watching all that live, angle. I'm like, if I'm watching that live, I'm like, that's what ruined Blake Griffin's career.
It's all whatever angle you see it at. Like, there's some people who are like, devastating maneuver. And there's someone who's like, he didn't touch him.
Duh.
Martel don't ask me why everybody in the crowd is the NBA Jam commentators, but it's fine.
Flair hits a suplex, and it's one of the cleanest suplexes you'll ever see.
It's really good.
One of, like, this side of Randy Orton, one of the cleanest suplexes you'll ever see. A figure four, and Martel obviously gets out of it because it's way too early for Ric Flair to win a match. If he's winning a match. Martel hits a suplex for a near fall. He tosses Flair off the top rope, hits a knee drop for a near fall.
Flair goes to the top rope. We all know what happens when Flair goes to the top rope. It's a bad time.
We did three parts on Ric Flair. A while back, I don't remember how long ago it was. All the time.
Martel trying to make Flair go to sleep. Flair gets free, tossed him to the outside. Flair goes for what appears to be a pile driver, Martel, with the counter for the back body drop. Flair got sent to the ring post before that and is a bloody mess.
He is a bleeding.
They're in the ring, and Martel just hits him like one time, you know, just smashes the head off the turnbuckle. And the size of the spot of Ric Flair's blood on the turnbuckle is concerning.
Also, a little jarring that we're in a Japanese ring and there are three turnbuckle pads instead of the one big one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think of that. Jarring. Yeah.
I know that's a New Japan thing, not an All Japan and like all these other promotions, but like it's still just the thing that I think of most when I think of Japanese wrestling is there's just one pad in the corner.
Yeah. That's fair.
Martel suplexes Flair into the ring, hits a slingshot splash, but Flair gets his foot on the ropes. There's a middle rope splash attempt, but Flair gets his knees up. Flair then hits a running crossbody, and they like kind of like he hits it right in the middle of the ring, but Martel like kind of picks him up, like keeps him up, but is stumbling backwards, and they stumble outside of the ring.
Yeah,
and that essentially leads to the finish because it's a countout.
Well, obviously, it's a title for title match in Japan for the NWA and AWA. They're not going to have the titles go to each other. So it leads to a count out and neither man can answer it. This is a very good match. Yeah. Go watch it on
2.0
speed.
This is how you put over someone. This is true. This made Martel look like a million bucks in my eyes.
We're going to take our first break. When we get back, we're looking at Martel as he goes to the WWF. back from the break. In 86, Martel would return to WWF, this time with tag team partner Tom Zenk as the Can-Am Connection.
Oh, God, I forgot about the Can-Am Connection.
Yeah, so the Can-Am Connection had been formed by Martel in like a Montreal-based area before. Zenk was the boyfriend of Martel's sister-in-law and had been introduced to Martel by Kurt Hennig. Can-Am Connection would split after WrestleMania 3. They had a match at WrestleMania 3 and they split. And Zenk claimed that Martel had secretly negotiated an individual contract worth three times as much as what Zenk was making. And of course, tag teams back in the day pretty much made the same amount of money. Like they pretty much made the same amount of money.
Listen, if I'm Rick Martel, I'm like, brother, I was the AWA champion for freaking 19 months. I was a star. I should not be making the same as freaking Zenk.
Zenk. Martel strongly disagreed. In a book with a tremendous title, Mad Dogs, Midgets, and Screwjobs, Martel said, ever since I had been fired by Jim Barnett, I decided not to discuss money matters with other wrestlers. I did the same thing with Tom, and he put it in his head, or some people put it in his head, that I made more than him. But as far as Vince McMahon was concerned, if you're in a tag team, you earn the same amount of money. He also claimed that Zenk, quote, was overwhelmed by it all. Wrestling is very hard on your body, hard on you mentally. It's hard physically. Tom wasn't mentally or physically hard as I thought he would be. So not only is he saying the money thing wasn't real, he's also saying you're weak.
You ain't a man.
You're not like me.
I'm built different.
The fact that Zenk would leave directly leads to the creation of Strikeforce because at the time, Can-Am Connection was in a feud with the Islanders, Haku and Tama. Zenk's departure was worked into the feud. So like they kept having the feud and it essentially was just Martel versus both Islanders. And he beat them both in singles competition and then they were beating him up on the August 15th, 1987 episode of Superstars of Wrestling. Martel defeated Barry Horowitz, famous jobber, and then was jumped by the Islanders. And Tito Santana, who was doing commentary on the Spanish broadcast team, came and helped Martel fight him off, leading to Strikeforce. It's a fun little organic way to do it. It reminds me a little bit of when Samoa Joe was on commentary and was just essentially like the sheriff of around the announce table.
Yeah. I mean, when Rollins, there's that famous one where Rollins is like, is it when he's beating up on Buddy?
No, him like and Buddy are like, they're in cahoots at that point and they're beating up on Dominic, I think. And
maybe.
And then he's like calling out Tom Phillips. Like,
get out of my face. Yeah. Seth, you better get out of my face. And then he's like, he didn't even look at Buddy. He's just like, you better get your boy out of my face too.
I just hear Drewski's, not around here, partner. Not around here, partner.
I'm one man army.
Let's look at Strike
Force.
Stand
on business.
Going for the WWF championships, the tag championships, versus the Hart Foundation in November of 1987. The thing I want to say about this match, the fans love this match. They're so fucking loud.
Oh, yeah. I had to slow it down. I was watching all these on 2.0 speed. I slowed this down to like 1.25.
I like watching it at about that speed, mainly because Martel and Santana and Brett and Jim, all excellent workers in their own way.
So fast.
I just wanted to see Jim Neidhart's mannerisms because he's so funny. Jim Neidhart has some of the greatest exaggerated mannerisms in the history of wrestling. Just the way he sells his punches, the way he like looks around to make sure the ref's not there, and then like a quick like back rake or eye poke. So good.
I just love how exaggerated he is, honestly, and I don't know what it is about him, because he's really not as like his limbs aren't skinny, but he reminds me so much of Eggman from Sonic, like the Sonic games.
It
can't explain why.
It's a vibe thing. They have a
it's
similar
got the
vibe.
Same energy as Eggnick, as Eggman.
Yeah.
Does.
No, I see it. What did you think of the actual in-ring action here?
I thought this was great. Martel starts off with Brett, and they just have a hot start. Hot start. Tito comes in, and he is massive compared to Bret Hart.
Tito's huge.
Tito's shoulders have shoulders.
I want to know what Tito Santana's listed at, because he was
I don't think
huge.
He's that tall is the thing. I think he's only like 6 feet, 6'1". If I had to take a guess.
Guess height and weight. Guess combine measurements for Tito.
I'm going to guess Tito's 6'1", like 240.
6'2", 234. You're right there.
Oh.
You're right there.
Felt good about it. You know, I he's just so big. But he doesn't really tower over people, which makes sense. He's only 6'2".
Yeah.
I say only, but I have to because it's pro wrestling.
Yes. Especially 80s pro wrestling.
Yeah, it's when Tito comes in that this match really takes a turn. He gets, there's heel tactics that lead to him pretty much being the fall guy for the entirety of the match.
He is getting worked for a long time. I will say, I love how wonderfully in sync Brett and Jim are in terms of their coordination of their heel tactics. Brett will just get Joey Morella's attention for a quick second, and in that exact moment, Jim will, you know, the quick knee to the back, the quick eye rake, the quick poke, whatever it is. It's really
yeah. Or the opposite.
Yeah.
The other way around, where Jim's in the ring. And I feel like every time Jim's the one running interference or running distractions, it's always for so long. He always gets so much distraction time and free time for Brett to just bully the hell out of Tito.
Poor Martel is screaming at Joey Morella to notice what's going on and just getting, and Morella comes over and is like, hey, you need to stop being so dramatic.
Yeah.
All right.
You need to chill, bro.
You need to settle down a little bit.
You're here. I need you here.
I need you way down here.
Yeah. When my hand goes up, your mouth goes shut. And my hand is up right now.
It's such a good line. Did you ever get hit with this is such an obscure reference. How did your teachers like get you to quiet down in class? Did they have like what kind of tricks did they have?
They just kind of said, can you guys quiet down?
Because I remember I had one class and it was every time you saw the Quiet Coyote, which wrestling fans will recognize as something else.
The Quiet Coyote, did have that.
Yeah, you saw the Quiet Coyote.
Like, nobody respected that Quiet Coyote, bro.
We loved that teacher, so we respected the Quiet Coyote.
Nah, so here's the thing. You're also Canadian.
Did you guys have... Hold on, I'm just going to say a thing, and I don't know if you know the response or not. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Hands on top. You got nothing?
No.
Oh, dude. Teacher would say hands on top, and you as a little kid would put your hands in your head and go, that means stop. Like, that was the call and response.
I was also, like, a delinquent, so I was not at all paying it. Quiet Coyote, I was like, too sweet me, brother. Not really, but, like, I may as well.
I was just saying, suck it.
If I had known about it at that age, I would have been, like, if I was, like, a child in, like, 2015, I would have been, like, it would have been over for these teachers if they tried to Quiet Coyote me.
I remember seeing a group of kids, they were probably like 8, 9 years old walking on the sidewalk, and I was like, oh my God, like there's so many of them. And then I just saw one, and he had a Kevin Nash and Scott Hall Outsiders backpack, and I was like, that's the coolest kid I've ever seen in my life.
Yes. I want to go shake that kid's hand, but that's inappropriate, so I'm not going to do it.
This was 2 years ago. Like, this was not like I was in the 90s or whatever. This was like 2 years ago. I saw this kid. I was like, oh my God, that's the coolest backpack I've ever seen.
Anyways, did you ask Murray got it?
I did not. Quiet Coyote tells us to go back to the match. Santana's going to work a lot. He reverses a whip into the corner and sends Brett chest first in the turnbuckle. Gets the hot tag to Martel. Rate the hot tag.
It is a hot tag. This is a solid 8. 8 out of 10. Because it's not even just about the content of what he's doing. It's more so the vibes than anything. He's out there throwing hands, fast, furious. And let me tell you something. It's like a freaking buffet because that's all you can eat. You get one. You get one. You get one. You're Oprah Winfrey. That is what you are, Rick Martel, because you're handing out freaking punches like it's nothing.
He's swinging at Jim. Drop kicks. Runs Brett off the apron. Middle rope crossbody Neidhart for 2 as Brett breaks it up. Martel gets Jim Neidhart into the Boston Crab, and Jim just gives up.
Well, there's a tandem slam. There's a
there is the tandem slam. Yes,
they tandem slam Jim down, and then the Boston Crab. And after a little bit, I'd say about a minute or so of struggle, he does maybe 30 seconds.
I was gonna say it felt a lot shorter than that. It felt like it was.
You got to give me some. Let me correct myself here. It's 30 seconds. I'm excited. I'm still thinking about the hot tag.
Strike Force are the tag team champions. Do you know who they lose the tag team championships to?
What year is this?
They would lose this tag team championships at WrestleMania 4 in Atlantic City.
Is it the people that we hate? The good old, I'm blanking on their name right now. Who are the tag teams that
you
I hate?
You don't like them. I know this for a fact. And we actually covered this match.
The fake Road Warriors. I forget their
name. Demolition. You're right. Yes, we covered that match back in episode 68 when we covered Demolition. Go and listen to our Demolition episode.
Back when King Javier Chad made me absolutely hate everything for a week.
Where Javier's mad for an hour. They only lost because Smash pinned Martel as a result of Martel being hit on the back of the neck by Mr. Fuji's cane that Axe was swinging. Martel would take some time off for injuries in mid-88, come back in 1989, reform Strikeforce with Santana at WrestleMania 5 to face the Brainbusters, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. During the match, Santana accidentally hit Martel with a signature flying forearm smash and knocked him out of the ring. A frustrated Martel refused to tag in and walked away, leaving Santana to be beaten down and pinned. And Gene Okerlund asked him after the match, like, hey, what the hell was that? And he says Martel said, I'm sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of him. You know, I was doing great as a singles wrestler. But no, Mr. Tito wants to ride my coattails some more. You saw his timing was off. And then told Santana, you're lucky that I'm being the gentleman that I am. I just walked off. That could have been a lot worse for you, Tito Santana. This is the birth of the model. He gains slick as a manager, and he decides to become the narcissistic model gimmick. I would say this is one of the framework narcissist gimmicks that exists.
Yeah, I mean, it's this. It's literally the narcissist, the Luger character.
Yeah. It's this, Mr. Perfect, and Lex Luger, like the holy trinity of being a self-centered dick.
Yeah.
And like they're three very different, but also they have very strong similar like character beats in all three.
You know what's another good one? There was a John Morrison run there right before he turned babyface. I think it might have still been an ECW. Yeah. It was Johnny Nitro, but there's like a weird narcissism run there that I thought was pretty good.
So just before the 89 Survivor Series, where in a continuation of their feud, Martel pinned Santana in the opening elimination match, Martel brought in his own fictional brand of cologne called Arrogance, which he carried in a big ass, it's called an atomizer, which is the big spray bottle. He sprays it in the eyes of his opponents. So we are watching some Arrogance vignettes. These rule.
He's on a horse, and for some reason, the first thing I thought of was Nikola Jokic. I was just like, all right. So now there's a correlation between Rick Martel and Nikola Jokic. They both like horses.
I love that Jokic just does not actually like basketball that much.
I love that he cares more about horses than he does basketball.
Honestly, I feel like that's really healthy for him. He's like, yeah, basketball is my job. Like, he treats basketball like he works at, like, Walgreens. He's like, yeah, you know, I clock in. I hang out. The guys at work are nice, but I just can't wait to get back to my horses.
Like, the fact that he's in the locker room after games and stuff, just literally watching horse racing videos. I just don't even want to know how much of his current contract has gone to betting on horse racing.
Do you know how annoying it is probably to have somebody drop 30, 18, and 14, and then you, like, see that after the game they're just watching, like, calling about their horses back in the home country? That'd be so frustrating.
How heated do you think Jimmy Butler was after the elimination game when, like, Jokic just wanted to get the fuck out?
Probably pretty heated.
I feel like pissed.
I feel like it doesn't take a lot for Jimmy to get heated. All right. Martel is on a horse. He says, saddle up for the fragrance that reigns supreme. And then has the greatest horse pun I've ever heard in my life. It appaloosens up the most resistant female. One, you don't need to resist. If a female resists, you just got to let her. Just don't do that. Don't do that. Don't be a predator.
I have to do the thing. Vince wrote that line.
Ooh, probably. I don't think Vince has many horse puns in his back pocket, though.
Well, maybe he didn't do that part, but he definitely did the back half of it.
He produced the vibe, and then a writer thought of Appaloosens Up.
Were you that writer? This is definitely something that you would have put in there.
A horse pun? I 100% would have put a horse pun in there.
Like, you're all in on this.
I'm all in on puns. He says it makes good horse sense, which isn't a pun, but is a funny thing to say.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't make good sense. It makes good horse sense.
Which, here's the thing. Horses are, like, so dumb. Like, just such dumb animals.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, the concept of horses was dumb.
No. I mean, like, kind of. Like, realistically, what do horses offer? You know? Like, cows, I get milk from a cow. Sheep, I get wool. Like, goats, I get goat milk. I get whatever else goats do.
I take you to the year 1890. Cars aren't real yet.
Okay, but here's the thing. Like, what does a horse offer me that I can't get from, like, one of those, like, another animal? I could use a donkey and still, like, it'd be fine, you know?
Horses are the ideal means of transportation. They are workhorses. Just because you're not running a farmstead doesn't mean there's no uses for horses.
Nah, here's the thing, right? Horses also suck on fences to the point where their stomach fills up with so much air that they literally cannot do anything and they collapse in a heap and you have to take them to the vet to get their stomachs pumped.
And humans die from sitting and playing video games for 83 hours straight. Every species has their outliers for being stupid. Right? I can't believe I'm taking a pro-horse stance here because of Rick Martel.
I didn't know you were a horse guy, Evan.
I'm not a horse guy, but I can understand the value of horses.
He says that his secret to success before every match is that he pumps up and he powers up with fragrance.
Arrogance.
He says something with the fragrance that something. I didn't write that down because I'm an idiot. And then he goes, arrogance.
He says, it's today's man in a classic can. Jesus. It overpowers, overwhelms, and pins down the competition. And then two women just emerge from underneath him.
I know that he probably didn't write this, yeah, but the delivery is incredible.
He's so good at this.
It is insane how good he is at this delivery.
It's wild to see someone find the role that they were meant to be in all along.
You know when Matthew McConaughey was like shelling those like Lincoln commercials?
When he was in the Lincoln ones. Yeah, yeah.
And he would do this exact voice.
Yeah.
Do you think that he would just hop on YouTube or like the WWE Network and be like, Rick the Model Martel, that's what I want to go for.
I like your Matthew McConaughey impression.
All right.
It's almost there. I agree. He's probably
McConaughey mixed with Rick Grimes.
The next one, he's playing tennis. He starts by going,
"Oh, this is the best one.
Practice." Allen Iverson,
you know what?
And because Rick Martel walked.
Nah, you know what? Here's the thing. That is the most French thing I've ever seen in my life.
Practice.
That is so French it hurts. He's not even French. He's French-Canadian. That is the most French thing I've ever seen in my life. He says whether it's a forehand or a backhand, I didn't even care about the reference after that. I just started sniping the tennis references within this thing.
He said forehand, backhand, every hand's a winner. I would like everyone to also note that when he says forehand and sprays the perfume, it goes directly in his face because of the wind. And
yes, he just shakes it off. That's what he wants because it's arrogance.
It'll make you the number one seed, one shot, and you'll be in the royal box at Wimbledon. I think he's trying to fuck Princess Diana. I think that's what he was trying to do.
Well, all right. What year is it?
It's like 89, 90. Like, that's fine.
She's alive. All right, we're good. It's in bounds. It's
in bounds. Yeah, she's still alive, dog. I don't even know if she's famous at this point. Is she famous at that point? Yeah.
Probably. She's definitely... I don't know if she's still Diana Spencer, but she's 100% married to Charles at this point.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I know I'm right. They weren't just married for 2 years and they got divorced, man. They had kids.
Oh, yeah. They got married in July of 81. All right. Yeah, I'm way off. Shout out to Princess Di, my style icon, because I also wear short shorts and crew neck sweaters all the time. So,
and I also care about humanity, unlike the, you know what, let's not do that one. We get to our final clip here, and this is all car puns, everybody.
Car puns.
The fragrance that opens up his baby's car door. Not a real baby, but a very attractive woman that he is with.
The man's cologne that primes pistons.
Makes spark plugs go hotter.
Improves your engine performance. I was like, is this Viagra?
Puts the brakes on the mundane and accelerate into the fast lane with arrogance.
Is this a dick pill? Like, the way he's talking about it is that this is a dick pill. And it's
blue perfume.
Yeah, this is sponsored by Blue Chew. Does your dick not work? Do you want it to work? Arrogance.
Spock plugs.
Spock plugs?
He just has to throw that in there so you can't all be dick references.
I like that you said Spock plugs like it's a fucking Vulcan car. Live long and prosper. All
it's
right.
Spock plugs. Well, you got to understand, I'm from Massachusetts, kid.
I was going to say, this is maybe the strongest your Boston has ever shown. All right, we're going to take a break after these wonderful vignettes. When we get back, we have one of the worst matches we've ever covered on this podcast. Back from the break, Rick Martel's highest profile feud during his stint as the model was against Jake the Snake Roberts. It started when he blinded Roberts with arrogance on the Brother Love show in October of 1990. They then captain opposing teams at Survivor Series with the Visionaries, Martel's team, which was himself, the Warlord Power and Glory, defeating the Vipers, which was Roberts, Jimmy Fly, Super Snuka, and the Rockers in a 4-0 clean sweep, the first ever clean sweep in Survivor Series history. They would then go back and forth and lead to this match at WrestleMania 7, a blindfold match.
God. Listen, I know a lot has been discussed on this, and they were like, shoot, blindfolded. But come on, man.
This is a match I knew happened. Like, I knew that this existed. I had never actually gone out of my way to watch it since I watched through all the WrestleManias when the network started.
I've never seen this match.
I forgot all of it. Martel won't get in the ring to start. They argue over who has to put on the hood on first. And I swear to you, they touch each other in this total of this match for 34 seconds, maybe?
It's literally four different times.
Like, it's a game of Marco Polo. It's Martel at one point is just swinging kicks. There's nobody around.
No, here's the thing. It's four times that they touch each other, and one of those is when Martel no longer has the mask on.
Yes. I will say, I love the way that Jake Roberts starts to figure out like where Martel is, which is like, by...
Oh, crowd.
He's waiting for the crowd to match where he's pointing. So once he points at Martel and the crowd goes, oh! He knows, like, okay, I gotta go this way. But by the time...
But he misses so many times.
By the time he does it, Martel has usually moved around because Martel's just sticking to the ropes and just like walking around the ring.
Yeah, it's not great. They're just walking around aimlessly. They're like just reaching. They can't find each other. At one point, they bump into each other and they charge and just miss. They both whiff completely. Martel does eventually get a hold of him and he hits him with some ground and pound. Martel leaves the ring. He accidentally touches the bag with Damien and he just flips out. He's like, oh, fuck.
Freaks out. He loses it. This is where I realized, you know those videos sometimes you'll see like prank, you know, or YouTube channels do where the one person will be blindfolded with like a Nerf gun and everybody else is trying to stay quiet in the room and not get hit with the Nerf gun?
Oh, yeah.
My favorite one of those videos is where everybody also has a harmonica in their mouth. And so the second they get hit, they just make a bunch of noise and people like trying to like make each other make noise. It's really funny. That's better than this match,
man. Well, yeah, because that's funny.
If you had to put two wrestlers in a blindfold match today, who would you put in it?
The Rock and Roman Reigns.
Oh my God. Just absolutely ruin the main event of WrestleMania 4.
Yeah, I mean, they already did.
There you go.
And I drop it at that. Martel, again, ground and pound. He touches the bag. He flips out. At one point, he does end up going around the ring from ringside. He grabs Jake. It pulls him out and then slams his head on the apron. If for those keeping count, that's the third time they've touched.
Yeah. I also like
there is one more.
Before then, Martel finds a steel chair and he's kind of using it to like kind of guide himself around. And he swings it at one point and hurts his hands. Because
he hits the post and he's like, he freaking Hanley Ramirez'd himself.
Both men finally get back in the ring. They bump into each other. Rick with right hands and a scoop slam. He misses an elbow drop because Roberts just rolls out of the way. Martel throws a hissy fit and takes the bag off. He takes the blindfold off of his face and wraps Roberts in the ropes.
Yeah.
And what's so he going to do? Beat his ass.
He's beating his ass.
He grabs Arrogance.
Just so weird, by the way, because like, how is the match not immediately called off?
That was my question, too. Who's the referee for this match?
Is it Hebner?
It's Earl Hebner. Martel grabs Arrogance. Earl Hebner tries to take it from him. Roberts is off the ropes, hits Martel with a DDT once he grabs him, takes forever to find Martel to cover him for the pin.
Because he still has the mask on.
Because he still has the blindfold on. It's still less time than Triple H took to pin Booker T at WrestleMania 19. I'm sure if you played them side by side, I would be right. That makes me sad.
You can find that clip right here.
For the rest of 1991, Martel represented the WWF on Japanese tours for Super World Sports. In December 91, he even lost to Naiko Sano in a match to determine the inaugural SWS Junior Heavyweight Champion. In 93 and 92, he mainly appeared on the lower undercard, rarely on television. He'd show up on like Wrestling Challenge and things like that. However, in 93, on the September 27th Monday Night Raw taping, he was the co-winner of a Battle Royal to decide competitors in a match for the vacant IC Championship. So we have that match as our last match. It is an IC title match with a vacant title, Raw, October 11th, 93. Rick Martel versus the bad guy, Razor Ramon.
You know, Martel looks pretty deflated, muscular. Why? Like
he definitely looks a little smaller. Shot. Yeah,
he looks a lot like smaller. He's got the Dean Malenko build now. I'm just wondering what could have happened in 1992 that would have made him deflate by 1993.
There's an IcoPro banner in the stands. Just gonna throw that out there too. Who's to say? I mean, there's actually nothing on his Wikipedia about anything like that, so who knows?
I mean, is there on anybody's Wikipedia page other than Vince McMahon's? Because the federal government came after him for it.
And Hulk Hogan. Yeah,
this is me insinuating that Martel was using steroids.
The light up entryway for this era of Raw is unreal.
Oh yeah,
it's so good. Like, that's all I want for a wrestling entrance twice. I don't need 40,000 LED screens. I really don't. I just need that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's kind of hard because this is literally just like a ballroom, you know?
Put more matches in ballrooms.
And that would work if it wasn't for the fact that wrestling is so hot and they just can sell out these arenas, man.
That's true. I mean, there's like no tickets left for most of the WrestleMania weekend stuff anyways. So we tried to get GCW tickets. There were none left.
None. They saw that sold out in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, we were behind. We were late by like 2 hours. We're like, oh, there's no tickets left.
Yeah, but at least we get to go to an old man show.
Yeah, we're going to some random like extreme reunion. Atsushi Onita is going to be on the card.
Yeah, as soon as I heard Atsushi Onita is going to be there, I was like, I am in.
It's Onita and a mystery partner versus the Dudley Boys, which sounds fucked.
It's like John Moxley.
I would lose my mind.
It's going to be Sandman, probably, right?
It's going to be Spike Dudley.
Or Tanaka.
Oh, my God. I would actually pop so hard for Tanaka. Anyways, what did you think of the match with Razor?
Razor's fit, the green, looks so good. I think it's like one of the cleanest like ring gears I've ever seen.
Razor Ramon belongs in either this green gear or the purple Razor gear. That's it. Those are the two Razor Ramon purple gears that I need.
Well, there's a blue one as well that I think is decent.
Oh, like the powder blue one? Yeah.
Yeah, the purple is the one that he's most known for, but the green is just. And yes, I am a Celtics fan, but that is beside the point.
The green's like a shiny Pokemon. Every, you know, it's like, oh my god, that's so good. Ooh, love it. Martell is so cocky in this match.
Cocky. He gets on top of the grip exchange and just starts slapping Razor in the back of the head to taunt him.
It's doing
Razor
jumping jacks.
Razor does eventually get the advantage. He hits a fallaway slam. Martell gets, yeah, it looks great. We covered that in the Scott Hall episode. Go back and listen. Razor effortlessly picked up Martell at one point and like placed him down on the apron, which is like shoot picked him up too. Like, it's not even like Martell like jumped, like he freaking lifted his ass and put him down there.
And then he slings him back into the ring. We get a commercial break. When we get back from the commercial, Martell is in control.
He's working over the back. Yes. He does like a mixture of like an angle slam and a back suplex.
Yeah.
It looks it more suplex, like a back suplex, but it's in the, like he grabs him like it's an angle slam.
He does. We get a cover with the feet on the ropes, but Earl Hebner sees it. Good job, Earl. Well done. He's
just stomping Razor's back, like full on stomping the small of the back.
And it's because he's going exclusively for a Boston Crab. He locks it in once. Razor reaches the ropes. He goes, does a sidewalk slam, goes for another crab, locks it in. Razor reverses it into a pin. I was like, okay, that's quite the reversal. Martell reverses that, then gets a dropkick. Martell getting a lot of shine here.
Yeah, a whole lot of shine. He's just so good at being a chicken shit heel.
Like I said, I loved him in Strikeforce when we saw him. It was so cool to see that Ric Flair match, but then you see him as the model, and you're like, you are meant to do this. Like this.
Yeah, he is so good at being a dick.
He's so good at it.
And you know why? It's because he's French-Canadian.
What an unnecessary jab. I dig it.
Well, think about the people who are French-Canadian. Kevin Owens, Kevin Steen, one of the greatest heels in independent wrestling, and also WWE when he came over. He was great at being ill. Sami Zayn, for as great of a babyface as he is, and he is. He's a fantastic babyface. Sami Zayn is the most annoying, like, shut the hell up, the heel there is.
Yeah.
The French Canadians know what they're doing, man.
They get it. They get it.
It's because they're French.
Yeah.
Martell hits a back suplex, taunts, and then he puts on the Boston Crab. He hits a flying crossbody. Razor, however, rolls through on the pin and gets a near fall out of it. Yeah. And then we get to the finish.
Pretty much the finish is just Razor hitting a Razor's Edge.
But he deadlifts Martell up into like the position. He like, I don't know if Martell's sandbagging or what the deal is, but Razor legit has to like deadlift him. And he does it he struggles to get the positioning at the beginning, but once he's got him locked in and he's like, all right, I just pick him up now. Like, he does it so effortlessly. It's not even... Razor is so strong.
Razor Ramon is so strong. Razor pins him, wins the belt. In August 94, Martell dropped out of the WWF picture, wouldn't be seen again until the 95 Rumble as a substitute for Jim Neidhart. Martell's final appearance came the following month at a house show in Montreal as his wrestling career began to slow. He started to do a career in real estate. In a shoot interview with RF Video, Martell claimed that he and Don Callis were set to return to WWF as the supermodels in 1997 before Callis turns on Martell, turning him face for the first time since 89. However, a pay dispute with Vince McMahon, Martell signed with WCW instead. Don Callis has Don Callis has confirmed that this was the plan in an interview with WWE.com in 2015. So I thought that was interesting.
Wow.
Martell would debut for WCW in 1998 on the January 5th episode of Nitro, defeating Brad Armstrong in his debut and before feuding with Booker T for the television championship. He failed to win and it sold out, and then his comeback was cut short because in a rematch with Booker T at Super Brawl 8, he landed badly on a throw, hitting his leg on one of the ring ropes and tore an inside ligament on his right knee, fractured his leg, and suffered cartilage damage, ending his in-ring career effectively.
That's not what you want to hear.
After retiring from the ring, he worked in WCW as a trainer, hosted some of the French versions of WCW programming, and then now manages his commercial properties he invested with his earnings from wrestling. Seems to live a very quiet life outside of wrestling. I always do the Twitter check as we do these podcasts. He explicitly says no podcasts on his Twitter, and honestly, I respect it.
I love it.
So we've run the gamut of Rick Martel's career. What did you think? What did you learn?
I was honestly impressed by the babyface side of it. I love Strikeforce. Sure. Strikeforce is one of the only things of the 80s that I like genuinely, truly like. I love this.
Strikeforce, Our Foundation, Rockers. Those three.
Yeah. Those three tag teams are excellent. I mean, you know, Savage and Steamboat and Flair, all that other stuff that everyone else loves. Like, that's all good stuff. But, like, the early phase of it, like, the fact that he busted out of Frankensteiner in 1980, that was insane to me.
Yeah.
And, like, he's really good. That Flair match put him over so big. And, like, you know, he just kind of went and became more of a character than a wrestler. And I thought that he nailed that part of it as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the way up till through this Razor match, I thought the work rate was there, aside from the Jake the Snake match where nobody could showcase their work rate.
How can you work when you cannot see?
How can you work when you can't do anything? But no, everything about this is great. Even the promo, like just being so, it's like something he was, it's like how Ryan Gosling was born to be Ken, you know?
Yeah.
Like he just, it just makes sense.
Rick Martel was meant for that role specifically. Yeah.
He was so good at it. He was perfect.
I think it was just really cool to see just how talented of a mat technician he was. Because, like, as the model, he didn't need to do that. That wasn't part of the gimmick. And you saw a little bit in Strikeforce. And, like, I'd seen that in some of the clips I'd seen in Strikeforce before. But holy shit, that Ric Flair match, I cannot say enough about how much people should go watch it just to see Rick Martel do something different.
Go watch it. It's imperative that you do.
You should also, these are also imperatives for you. You should also follow us on social media. You should follow Javier wherever he tells you right now.
I will make the sign eventually, I swear it. At JMello Sports on the Twitter machine. Go ahead, lob the boy a follow.
You can follow me on the Twitter machine as well. At @itsevengomes, @itsevangomes. Follow the podcast, most importantly, on Twitter and Instagram. @crossbodyofwork. Also hit subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Thanks for making it this far. Hit that subscribe button. Also make sure you like the video. If you're not on YouTube right now, you should go and check out YouTube. We throw our throwback episodes on there. We do some other fun series like our fantasy booking take a card make a guard. We have our first episode of Crossbody Corrections where we rebooked the 2015 Royal Rumble, and we have a new series coming soon, which is very exciting. So you should join us there as we play a game of Guess the Wrestler by their titles. It's a really fun time. You should go and watch that when it comes out. Fullpressshop.com. Cop the merch. Support the boys. Javier's got the Fresh Prince tee on right now. You should also go to fullpresswrestling.com to watch all the matches this week. Obviously, the recommendations are the Ric Flair match and the Arrogance vignettes.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. 100%. Next week, who are we covering next week? We're diving back into the world of tag wrestling, and Javier is spoiling it. If you're watching on YouTube, we are covering the Bushwhackers.
Yeah, we are. The sheep herders, the good old Aussie New Zealand boys who wrestled and were funny, but also apparently were very bloody and violent and scary, and I cannot wait to see the full spectrum of their work.
I think that's the thing that I'm most excited for, because yeah, you know, the Kiwis, they're from New Zealand. They had this this run as the new sheep herders before they were the Bushwhackers, that apparently was like a legendary, like they were just mean assholes. And I'm so excited to dig into that. I think it's going to be really fun.
I am excited. I cannot wait. A week cannot go by quicker because I cannot wait to record that.
Before we do our goodbyes, Javier, who do you got in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to go with the Chiefs, man. I think that there just comes a point where a guy is too damn good at this damn sport. And we saw it for damn near 20 years with Tom Brady. And honestly, I think we're just going to start seeing it with Patrick Mahomes.
I got Chiefs, I got the under, and I got whatever the over is on Isaiah Pacheco rushing yards. Gimme, gimme, gimme. I think this is going to be a surprisingly run-based game. Prove me wrong, Chiefs and Niners. Throw a couple dollars on the long shot that Travis Kelce proposes to Taylor Swift, because wouldn't that be fun? No. Wouldn't that be fun? All right.
No shot.
We're getting out of here. Javier, it's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, you know, we just had such a happy, exciting episode, and I can't wait to ruin that energy by making this so sad. Not really. So, you know, I've been having a sort of difficult time with my career lately. There has been a responsibility placed upon me that I just cannot do. Like truly cannot do. It's not in my job description at all. We just kind of had to divide someone who's left, who left's job in the meantime amongst the administrative team. And I got stuck. Jesus. I got stuck with visas and I can't do it. I can't figure it out. And it's bad. And it's starting to negatively affect me mentally and in my personal life, because it's kind of bleeding over into that. And that is something that I am working on getting removed from my responsibilities. And pretty much the advice that comes out of that is, like, if, you know, if in your professional life or school or pretty much anything, honestly, starts affecting you negatively in that way, and it starts bleeding into your personal life, and it starts leaving you in a headspace and in a space where you are no longer accepting of it, like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter if you're stuck, if you feel like you can't talk to your manager or your boss or whoever it is to sort of move away from that. Like, they are there for a reason. You talk to them. And if they do not listen, you talk to HR and you do what you have to do. Because if this is a responsibility that is not a part of what you signed up for, get out of it. Because if it's messing up life outside of work, I promise you it is not worth it. No job is ever worth tanking your mental health and ruining your personal life. It's just not.
Javier with the real life advice this week. I love when it's the real life advice, because a reminder that, like, a couple of months ago, the life advice was don't die.
Don't die.
Probably the greatest life advice we've ever received on this podcast. All right. Thank you so much for listening and joining us this week. We're back next week with the Bushwhackers. We will talk to you then.